And welcome back to another episode of Jonah and Ben Play Board Games with Friends. I am joined, as always, by my co-host Jonah.
Hello, hello.
And today on this episode, we have back again our friend Greg.
Hello, what's happening?
Not much. Greg, I have a question for you to start off this podcast. when was the last time you jumped?
Oh, it's funny that you bring that up. I was just thinking about that the other day. I can't remember the last time I jumped for a purpose. It really blew my mind because I'm thinking about all the physical activities that I don't do, and
jumping is one of them.
Yeah, because I mean, to be fair, I'm a little on the taller side, so for things that are out of reach, it's not always the case. But I'm thinking I never jumped for I haven't jumped for a purpose in a long time. So, like, when was the last time you jumped that you needed to jump for something?
Well, Greg, you and I are about the same height, so I think you have like a foot on me. I don't even know at this point, but a good couple inches. Well, now that since you've put in the for a purpose part, I probably, again, just like the last time I ran for a purpose was probably in high school playing baseball. But the last time I just jumped in general, we were doing box jumps at the gym last week, so I did that. But
okay. I guess I was, yeah, I guess that counts. I was thinking more like outside of exercise. Yeah, like you're strolling along in real life and, you know, you needed to jump something. Like, oh, suddenly like a wild hose, like fire hose was swinging around on the sidewalk and needed to jump over it.
I take it back. My brother and I went to the local roller hockey rink, and he decided to shoot a puck at me, and I had to jump over it.
Nice. That's what I'm talking about.
Does jumping over a puddle count?
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
that's a purpose.
Yeah, something was obstructing your way, and you needed to get over it.
And then, what's your definition of purpose for running?
You know, if you're being chased, if you needed to catch a train, you know, that kind of thing. Or both.
I don't think I've run through an airport in a while. But I do remember when I was living in Scotland and I was in London for the weekend, I woke up and didn't realize how early my flight was and actually ran on the streets of London to try and catch a bus on time to make it to the airport. So I guess that's the last time I ran for a purpose.
And I'm assuming you made it?
No.
Oh. It's not fast enough.
That's right. It's okay. Flights from London to Edinburgh were, I think, like $10. So.
Wow.
It wasn't the end of the world.
Honestly, at this point, I wouldn't mind running to get on a flight.
Yeah, I can't see myself running for a purpose for a while. Unless there's... Yeah, again, someone chasing me. I need to catch a flight to Edinburgh.
Well, I run a few times a week with Jessica.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Is that a purpose, to maintain the strength of the relationship?
Oh, yeah, that's the best purpose I think you can run for.
Also to stay fit or to attempt to become fit.
Yeah, something we can strive for, but this is a board game podcast, which is... opposite of it, but
I mean, I was about to ask when the last time you ran to the computer to play a board game was, which sounds weird in itself to say going to the computer to play a board game, but
I played a board game in real life last night.
Oh, did you? What was it?
I played The Crew with Jessica and my grandmother, the cooperative trick-taking game that we have talked about several times, and it was fun. We played the first 5 missions, and I could tell that they both enjoyed it, and yeah, it was good. Good casual game.
Yeah, I also played in person last night. Two games in person, actually.
Wow.
Played Decrypto. Have you played Decrypto?
It like doesn't work with my colorblind eyes.
Oh, true, yeah. That's a good point.
I really like Decrypto, but yes, for colorblind. Like, I can see it not working.
That stupid screen with the letters behind it is really just a screen with nothing behind it for me, so it doesn't work.
Oh, I didn't even think about that, yeah. I was also thinking about, when you teach this game, and this could be a topic for you guys too, that it's probably the easiest game that's the hardest to explain for some reason. Like, I feel pretty good about being able to teach this game. I've done it a bunch of times, but for some reason, or in fact, maybe I'm not a good teacher if this keeps happening, but people just don't seem to grasp the concept, like, the first two rounds or so.
Funny enough, though, I agree with you. I don't think it's you, because even though I've played it a couple times, each time I need like a refresher, just like a really quick refresher. And when I hear somebody trying to explain that refresher to me and then also teach it to new people, it gets people a bit confused.
Why don't you guys practice on me right now? Because I played it once a few years ago. Can you refresh my memory on how the game works?
Yes, yes. Actually, let me do some jumping jacks real quick. Just get my brain working.
Jump for a purpose.
Do it for a purpose, yeah. So it's a team-based game. It's very similar to, I guess, Codenames, word-based, where each team has a stand, and the stand has four slots. And you insert these cards they have words on them, but they're scrambled to the naked eye. But if you put them in the slots, there's that red, I don't even know what you call that, like that plastic.
So red revealer is technically like...
Is that the technical name? That.
Yeah, and then it's scrambled for the colorblind eye after that.
That's you can't win, man. So you put the cards in and they reveal words. And each slot is also numbered 1 through 4. And the objective of the game is to get your team to guess a code, a 3-digit code. So each team has this deck of code cards, and whoever's giving the code will pick one up and says maybe like 3, 1, 2. So that means that person has to give clues for the team to guess the word that's corresponding with 3, 1, and 2 in that order. The other team will do exactly the same. After they're done giving the clues, which they're writing on a piece of paper, the team will make a guess. So they might guess 3, 1, 2. That'd be fantastic. They'll get it correct. If they guess wrong, they get a miscommunication token, which is bad. If you get 2 miscommunication tokens, you lose. But after round 1, we'll compare what clues we gave each other with the other team. And they'll keep a running list of all the clues for the corresponding numbers of the other team. So that means that after round 1, we'll have an idea of what the other team's words are based off of previous clues. So there's one more step involved in the corresponding rounds to guess what the other team's code is. And that's where people seem to like get confused. Because I also mentioned that the words stay the same throughout the game. I think people think that the words will put new words in the slots, so it doesn't make sense to them. But you're just trying to intercept the other person's code with the previous clues that have been given. So how does that, did that blow
it.
Your mind?
Wish I had a round of applause sound effect for you.
Even I'm like confused after saying that though. So yeah, I don't know. It's a great game. I mean, I've gone through a lot of the sheets. I have to get it laminated or else I'm going to be running out soon.
Why don't you pick up the laser expansion?
What was that? The laser what?
The laser disc expansion.
Oh, there's an expansion for it?
Yeah. What adds? I don't remember exactly what it adds. I know I haven't like looked into it too deeply. I just know it exists, and I know it adds more cards. So there's like more options. But I think it adds like larger cards, and it adds something with those. But I don't know exactly what it adds. I just know an expansion exists.
I'll have to check that out then, yeah, because I maybe have like one more play in it before I'm out of sheets. But I think it's, in my opinion, I think it's better than Codenames. There's just more, you get more involved on the turn, I suppose.
I've only played Codenames once, and it fell flat completely with everybody that I tried to play with, so I would believe it.
How many people did you try with?
I think it was a 6-player game of Codenames.
So 3 and 3?
Yeah.
I feel like that's an ideal number.
It was my family, and everyone was just like, but you're just like saying a word, and then we're just guessing a word. And they're like, this is not fun.
Yeah, the way I explain codenames is, for a lot of games, what's the one that you're given a bunch of clues for the team to guess like one word. This is literally the exact opposite, where you're trying to get the team to guess multiple words with one clue.
Taboo.
Taboo, yeah, that's the one. Yeah, it's the literal opposite of taboo. And some people click with that, but I mean, I've had great success with codenames, but I think Decrypto, I think, just adds a little fun spin to it. Mm-hmm. I like a little bit more.
Just One is my favorite family word game, because I think Codenames has been great. It's also fallen flat a few times. I think some people will think so much in Codenames that there's just dead time for everyone else, which can really make the game not enjoyable. And then Decrypto, I actually was able to see some of the words, or I was a different role, and I remember not really enjoying it that much. So Just One is the one for me.
Yeah, I really like Just One too. I actually played that recently as well. It was a hit. But actually, that was a great point you brought up, or something I thought of. Do you implement the timer, the sand timer, in these types of games? Or do you just kind of have the experience, and if it takes a little longer, so be it?
I implement the sand timer because I think the point of these family games is more to have fun and a good experience than to win. And the moment someone starts taking a long time, I mean, I do it very tongue-in-cheek, just like, you know, even reaching for the sand timer and smiling at someone sends the message, hurry up. But
yeah, like, don't make me flip this over right now.
Exactly. Not in an actual mean, threatening way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So you played Decrypto last night?
Played Decrypto last night at a four-player game, so that was fun. And then we also played, we finished the night off with Quirkle.
Oh, wow.
Which is, that's a favorite of mine, just because it's probably gotten the most use. I've played it with my parents, family, non-gamers alike. It's just so accessible. Just Scrabble with colors and shapes. So is that a hard game for you, though, with the colors? Or?
You know, I actually haven't played Quirkle before. I know it, I've seen it, but I've never been too interested.
Yeah, I haven't played it either.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's a great, just abstract tile land game. It's Scrabble, shapes and colors, and super easy to understand. In fact, when I teach Azul, for the people who have played Quirkle before, I use that as an analogy because it's the same sort of scoring mechanic where you're making lines and adding up those points. But that was a big hit. Also, that's the best value game I think I have in my collection, which is another topic I was going to suggest to you guys with. What was the game that you've gotten the most value out of? Because Quirkle I got at a thrift store for like $4 or something. But I've played it probably the most out of all of my games.
Well, why don't we just jump into it right now? I can answer that with two games that are on the complete opposite side of the price spectrum as well, which is fun. Game number one, Hanabi. There is no doubt in my mind that we have played our copy. We have two copies of Hanabi, in fact, over 100 times. 100%, we have done that because we played it all the time in Korea. We brought it traveling everywhere. Easy. Second game, Food Chain Magnate. You know, Hanabi costs $10. Food Chain costs $80. But I played Food Chain in person quite a few times as well, and somehow I have gotten my money's worth out of it.
Oh, probably it's probably tenfold, man. It's you have to compare it to like going in the movies or something, you know? 2 hours of that, it costs you whatever, $15 plus get some popcorn, it's $50. And then, yeah, and you're only 2 hours of entertainment, but I can imagine the amount of time that you've gotten from Food Chain.
Yeah, it's funny. It's kind of the same with Twilight Imperium, because like two plays of that is, you know, 16 hours times six people, and then it's, yeah.
Hey, it's definitely worth it. What about you, Ben? Do you have a value game that
Trick shot already?
Honestly, no, honestly, I was gonna say, I think, well, Trick Shot was like $70, so it eventually probably, but honestly, I think right now the most value I've gotten out of a game, interestingly enough, is probably
Checkers 2000.
not, well, I mean, I'm not gonna count that. I got that at a Purim festival for I won it as a prize, so
Oh,
that
geez,
kind
you
of
can't divide by
earned.
zero, so yeah, that's not allowed.
Yeah. No, I honestly probably unmatched at this point. Jared and I have played unmatched so much, and it was, I mean, I got the game on sale for $30, I think, so it's like not that expensive for a board game nowadays. It's kind of like in the middle-ish, middle low end, and we played it a lot. So I'd probably say that, although I'm trying to think of like my small games that we seem to play a lot.
Fox in the
But I
Forest,
would say,
Hanamakoji.
I mean, not yet. I think we've gotten more plays of Unmatched than both of those. I mean, Fox in the Forest only needs like three more plays, considering it was $4. And then, let's see, worst value. I mean, it's got to be one of my unplayed games that's well over $100, right? I
Oh, we
mean,
don't need to talk worst value.
so I don't know. Honestly, I think my worst value is probably Scythe, just because of, I mean, the metal mechs alone probably make it the worst value, even though I want to play it with the metal mechs because they're hefty and sweet. But I mean, those were four games in price alone, and they're literally just mechs to throw on the board. So yeah, good times, love it. I love it.
Yeah, but just seeing your smiling face talk about it, like I think I'm getting value out of that,
That's
basically.
right.
Oh, Greg, you're too nice after ruining all of the tech that we have for this podcast.
Don't reveal what goes on. Go on behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes.
Ben, what'd you play this week? I actually have a game that I'm keen to talk about, especially since Greg is on.
I've played two games, one of which I never want to play or talk about again, and that's Teach You. It's literally the worst game I've ever played.
Can I tell you something funny?
Nope. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to talk about Teach You.
I
It's the
figured out
worst.
why. I figured out something that should have happened but never did.
Okay, can I just talk about the other game I played first, and then we could just
It's
really quickly
a
come back?
5 second comment, Ben. I promise
Okay.
you won't get hurt too
Go.
badly.
Go for it.
I don't think you and I were ever on the same team.
We weren't. We haven't been, but I don't think. I think I don't like this game at all because trick taking isn't super my thing. Like, it's not my thing in like really most ways, but I also don't think cooperative games with a mechanic I don't like, where you can't discuss what you're trying to do with your teammate, click with me at all. Because the way I think about it is completely different than the way that someone else thinks about it, and it doesn't click, and it frustrates me that I can't say what I would like to try and get done, and I don't like it.
I think the beauty of Teach You though comes with playing with the
No,
same person.
there's no beauty in this game. The other game I played this week is Wavelength. That's a lot more fun.
Got to be
Wavelength
on the same
is,
wavelength with your partner. That's basically what it comes down to.
yes, which is funny that I mentioned trick-taking games where you are doing co-op or you can't discuss, because this is kind of similar, I guess, in that it's a co-op game where when you give the clue, you can't discuss. But Wavelength is a game where you have to be on the same wavelength as your partner, and you have this giant wheel, and it's got like a range of points, and
And it clicks
you're.
really nicely.
It does click really nicely, and you spin the wheel when you are
Just
the
like your
clues
partner in
are.
Teach You.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
Okay, I'll stop.
you and
I'll
me, right?
stop. You spin the wheel, and wherever the range falls, you then pick up, you get a clue card, and it might say like on a range from cold to hot, and you're trying to say something that you think is where the points are. So if it's like right in the middle, and it's on a range from cold to hot, you might say room temperature water to try and get your teammate.
I think you're not allowed to give that clue.
Why not? I thought it just said you can't say numbers.
I think the rule book says you can't give a clue that is two ideas together.
Really?
Yeah,
Oh,
so like
well.
if the thing is easy to do and difficult to do, you can't say like eating spaghetti on a roller coaster, because that's two ideas together. Because then you have to think about if it's the eating of spaghetti that's being judged or doing it on the roller coaster that's being judged.
Oh, okay.
I
I'll
mean, it
be
doesn't
honest,
matter. Play
this
it
game's
for
so
fun
easy,
and
I didn't
however you
read the
want.
rule book to begin with.
Yeah.
But basically, you spin the wheel and you're trying to get your teammate, because you close the wheel so they can't see where the range is, and they try and turn a dial to try and get it like where they think you think that item falls. And it was my brother and I versus my mom and my dad, and we played two games, and my parents won both games.
Did you play your audience or did you play your own ideas? So, like, if we're playing the three of us
Yes.
and it's bad game to good game and Tichu comes up, do I give a clue for you or for Greg?
Okay, this podcast is going to become in future episodes, Jonah plays board games with friends. It was nice to get to know all of you. No, it kind of depends on the clue, I guess. Like one of them was like high quality to low quality, or low quality to high quality, whatever range it was. And like, I know, I was being with my brother, I know something he owns that he thinks is of high quality. So I said what he owned, that's to try and get him to push it up. But sometimes it was like, for me, like I would say something that he would think that I would, it kind of depends on the clue, but.
Right. I think one thing that's really interesting with wavelength is that when you're giving a clue, I think there are actually three audiences to consider. And that's yourself, the clue giver, the person or people you're giving the clue to, and then also what general knowledge slash the general population would think about something.
Yeah, and for that third one, I actually got on a scale of like hero to villain, and it was like right in the middle, and I couldn't think of like someone who was just not a hero or a villain, so I said Lois Lane because it's
Magneto,
just,
for sure.
well, that, see, that's the thing. Like I was maybe like Deadpool, but Deadpool's an anti-hero, so like he would swing to hero because hero's in the name. So I would think like most people would just put him toward a hero because he was in a superhero movie.
What about the main character from Idiocracy that scored average in every single test possible?
All I know was that for this question, I was trying to play to my brother, who knows nothing about comic books or anything, and he didn't even know who Lois Lane was. So he
It's
guessed that
Batman's
she
mom,
was.
right?
Yeah. He guessed Lois Lane was a villain, like hard villain,
Oh
like
no.
way to the left. And wait, and then my mom was on the side and she was like, "What are you, an idiot? She's like Superman's sidekick." And I'm like, "Mom, she's not Superman's sidekick. She's his girlfriend."
Side piece, that's what she meant.
Yeah. And my dad and I are like on the side, 'cause my dad, like, he's not like a comic book guy, but he knows who Lois Lane is, and he's just looking at my mom like she's an idiot, and I'm looking at my brother like he's an idiot. And it was a
Should have
good
switched
time.
up the teams.
It was a good family time. Well, we
Well,
wanted to see if my parents knew each other as well as we think they did, so.
and they
And
did,
clearly
right?
they did. Yeah. We
Was
did.
that?
What was crazy, just really quick, and then you can go, Greg. In the range of points, it goes two, so it's like a wedge. And on the outside of both sides, there's 2 points, and then inside there's three, and then right in the middle there's a wedge for 4 points. And my brother and I did a clue and hit the 4 point, and then my mom and dad went and they hit a 4 point, like two in a row, which was kind of
Dang,
nuts.
that's a big jump.
Yeah.
Do you also play with they get to guess if the
Yes.
dial's on the left or the right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What I was going to say was, like, none of that stuff kind of matters, with, especially with the rule and stuff. As long as you had a good time, like,
Yeah.
if that's what the end game should be, is it's an enjoyable experience for everybody. And if you mess up a rule or the clue was silly, it
I want to
doesn't matter.
stress, I didn't bring up the rule to say you have to play this way.
Yeah, I
No,
But yeah,
you did.
but some
You
people are
did.
sticklers. But some people are sticklers, though. Like,
Like the sand timer in Codenames.
yeah, exactly. You're just like, slowly reaching toward it, towards it, and then you all of a sudden the person starts sweating and having a panic attack. But not
But
me, not me.
Yeah, no, Wavelength was a lot of fun, so I'm glad we got to play that. Because I was pushing for that the entire time they were here, so
Did they leave?
instead, yeah, they're gone now. They left this morning at like 5 in the morning, so
Well.
they took a solid number of games back though, so I have like I think I have like 2.5 more Kallax cubes open, which is nice. So
Let the buying begin.
no, there's still some incoming stuff. And when we talk about our goals for 2021, I'll get into it more. But no, I'm not trying to buy, at least not right now. But
I had to go to, I had to make an emergency IKEA trip the other day, get another Kallax, because Kickstarter stuff started flowing in. I'm like, oh geez, it's bad when you have games like on the floor, just like around the house.
okay, the one thing that I just want to add to this is I don't understand. It's like Kickstarter creators are like stalking my life because I swear every single time my parents come to town or every single time I go out of town and it's just my brother at home who gets annoyed bringing packages in for me, they just decide to deliver like every game that's been backed up for 2 years. And then my parents are like, "What do you keep buying? What are you doing?" And I'm like, "I swear to you, I paid for this game 2 years ago." It's like every single time they decide to start delivering stuff, it's ridiculous.
I know I had actually speaking of Wavelength, the Fuzzies, which is a game created by the Wavelength people,
Right, it's
which is
Jenga with pipe cleaners, right?
yeah,
Whatever those are
basically,
called.
you take like tweezers and you just take a fuzzy ball off the stack and just put it on top, and it just, I guess, becomes this weird shape. It eventually falls over. It was super cheap on Kickstarter, and Wavelength was cool, so I thought, let's give this one a shot. But what I wanted to bring up was, with Kickstarter, I got an email that my Crokinole board is on its way, which I'm extremely excited about.
Wow.
So it's exciting. I keep ch checking the tracking number every 5 minutes because, that's what we do.
Oh, you know it. I have my tracking apps that give me push notifications.
That's right, yeah. So I have to make room for that. I think I'm thinking about hanging it up, though. I liked your sort of style, Ben, with the sort of aesthetic in the game room.
Oh, for a second, I thought you meant like hang it up, like hang up the towel, like your board game career is done. I was like,
Oh, yeah, awesome. That's a whole nother podcast for sure.
Can I do a quick backtrack segue to a game that I played this week?
Yes, of course.
I played a game called Heirloom, which has been designed by friends of ours, Sean and Laura. And Greg, you played this as well. You played an earlier version than I played. It is still in the design process, still in the playtesting process, I guess we should say. And Heirloom is a game about growing flowers and completing flower contracts. And there's a really cool time aspect to it where you plant the seeds and they grow into flowers, of course, down the line. And there are, I think, six different types of flowers. One of them is a vegetable that can't be used in a contract anyway. There are different types of flowers, and it's interesting because you'll plant the seed for the zinnia, which will be a flower in 6 months and 8 months. I'm sorry, Sean, if you're listening and I'm not remembering the exact numbers. You can also plant the seed for a lily, which will be in 9 months and 12 months anyway. So there's this huge temporal aspect to this to figure out when to plant your seeds, when to harvest the flowers, and what contracts you think you can complete at that time. So we played a three-player game, me, Sean, and Nick, and I thought it was pretty cool. What did you think of the game, Greg?
I also thought it was pretty cool. I played a super early copy like 2 years ago, and then I also played, I guess, I'm assuming the version that you played because I only played, a couple weeks ago as well.
Right.
But yeah, I thought that time aspect is really for me, the coolest part, I should say, because you have this seasonal dial, and that rotates every round, and you have to really plan out when you want to plant your seeds and get the most value out of each month, basically. Because some months you're able to plant two seeds, some only one. So being able to set up those blooms, right, I guess, or whatever, you know, you're getting those flowers, is really key. And then, you know, I love contract fulfillment. So that was a great aspect of it. And, you know, there's some like tech tiles, I guess you could invest in too, that sort of give you maybe a little special power or some kind of bonus, which is pretty nice. But, you know, I thought it was a really solid economic games, and you're the economic guru. So you'd probably have a better...
Oh, man. Am I?
Well, I listened to your podcast last week, and you're talking about Brass and how much you hated it, and, you know, food chain. So I think you have some strong opinions on economic games. It's not my forte. Even in real life, economics is not my forte. But no, I enjoyed it as a game. I thought it was really clever, and I wish them the best of luck with it.
Yeah, it's really cool to play test something as well and have a say in the design process. I actually got a message from Sean this morning thanking Nick and I for playing and for giving him some feedback. And, you know, while we were playing, I thought of some things that I thought were good, some things I thought could change. I don't want to say anything that was bad. It's really just, you know, my opinion on what something should be. Anyway, the whole time Sean was saying, you know, really lay it on him, really tell him what we thought was bad and what shouldn't be there and what should change. And it's nice to try something that's being made and give some opinions. I've play tested one game before that was being designed, and that was Australia with a Z, and that's designed by Martin Wallace, funnily enough, the guy behind Brass. But I was just kind of an average Joe playtester for that, because that's a big name, whereas I'm slightly above average Joe status in Sean's brain, I guess.
So I have a question about that playtest, not the Australia, but the Heirloom one. I've never playtested a game, but in my head at least, and I know that we kind of had the discussion on like theme versus mechanic, and theme can also be like art style and stuff. I don't need art and things to enjoy a game. But, like, is there art for the game yet? Because I feel like if I am playtesting a game that has no art, where, like, I see people post online that they're playtesting a game, and it's literally just, like, words on blank white cards, and they're testing the mechanics, I feel like I would have no connection to the game at all as a playtester if there's no art at all to see how it would, like, look. But that is just how I think about games, I guess.
Yeah, so before I playtested it, I had no idea what it looked like, and I actually was mentally prepared to be playing a game that looked, you know, like some pieces of graph paper with some symbols on it, to put things bluntly. But it was actually a lot further along in the design process than I anticipated. So, you know, there was the building on the left with the windows, and then there was the shops on the right with the doors and also some windows and some flower pots and stuff. And the flowers that you were planting were actual flowers. Flower shapes, I guess I should say. I think you would have no problem parsing what's happening in this game because of the art and the connection between things. Like, you know, a flower being a flower helps as well. You're not just pulling up some cube from your garden and saying, oh, this is a lily. You know, it's actually a colored flower.
Yeah, and I know that there are different phases of, you know, playtesting. I feel like the later phases would be where I would be someone who could come in and try a game out, versus like the very early stage where it is the graph paper. But
I was gonna say that I think that's what one thing they did really well was the design of it, the art, because there's the side of the building that has the windowsill, and the windowsill is sort of a mechanic where you put flowers to. So I guess you're investing in fulfilling that contract later, but there's the windowsill, and then the other side is the front-facing thing where you can sell the flowers, like sort of the shops, like you said. And then you have your own sort of player board, I guess, which is the inside of your shop. So it has like this deconstructed look at the whole building and inside. So that just adds to the theme as well. So I think they really did a good job initially of it. And it's just really impressive to see how much work and effort that goes into creating this game, especially after a few years and thinking about it and different implementations of it, trying to develop it as best as they can. It's pretty admirable.
Yeah, I really agree. The whole time that I was playing it, I was telling Sean, you know, I have some ideas. Well, not I do have some criticisms of, you know, things in the game. But before I say any of that, I really want to stress how amazed I am that you are at this point and have done all this work. Because, you know, they've really made a cool game. And in the playtest, you know, while I was playing it, I was thinking, yeah, this is a game. Like, if I was at a board game meetup and someone put that in front of me in its final form just with those rules, I would be like, yeah, I just played a real board game. So I was really impressed that they were at that point. And, you know, anything I had to say, I made sure to tell Sean first how cool it was that they had done all that.
I did the exact same thing. I'm like, look, this is a ton of work. This game's already great. It's solid. That's probably the best keyword to say is, like, this is just a solid game that you've created. I'm sure it can only get better from here. You know, both Sean and Laura are brilliant people, and they can, you know, take that feedback and just whip it into just a magnificent product, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was cool. I think we're going to have Sean on here in 2 weeks, so we'll talk a little more about the nitty-gritty stuff when he joins us.
Yeah, it'd probably be interesting to pick his brain in terms of the work that went into developing it and playtesting and sort of the behind-the-scenes look at that process.
Right, and Ben, one thing that you'll be interested in is that they sent their design to Stonemaier. And Stonemaier said, yeah, we're interested. Send us a gameplay video.
And I think I was in that video.
I will let Sean pick up that story when he's on the show.
Wow, that's really cool. That's big time, too, because Stonemaier's, is big.
They print money, yeah.
Popular. Yeah, so.
And it doesn't help. It doesn't hurt that they named one of the shops after me, which is pretty nice.
I saw that. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. So, you know, no big deal. Just going to throw that in there.
Anyway, the last game that I played, I actually got in a quick game of Clans on Board Game Arena, Clans of Caledonia, which we have covered several times before. It's Scotland, and you're a farmer, but it's really good. The contract fulfillment that we all know and love is in that game, and the market I find really interesting as well. Because if you sell a bunch of stuff, the price is going to go down because the market is full of the goods. So, you know, supply and demand. And the inverse is true for purchasing a lot of goods from the market. Sean and Laura actually have a very similar market in Heirloom. The difference being that if you go to buy something, the price shifts up and then you buy it, whereas in Clans, you buy X goods and then shift the price X spots on the track. And that was actually one of the criticisms I had of their design. I think that's neat in theory, but in practice, buying three flowers and having the first one be 5, the second one be 6, and the third one be 7, I just think is a little more mentally taxing and more math than is needed for that aspect of it.
Is that how that works, though? I thought you shift the price and then buy as many as you wanted. Maybe that was
so
wrong.
Sean said that they are toying with both ideas right now, but the rules as written on the player card said, you know, increase the price, then buy, then increase the price, then buy. I'm pretty sure it said repeat for multiple purchases. Heavy asterisk on that comment.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably would agree with you on that, but I just remember, the shifting the price, I thought that was an interesting part of it. And I think he did say he took a lot of influence from Clans, which, you know, that's a great game as well.
Yeah.
Right. There's just one more game I just wanted to throw out there very quickly that I thought was pretty cool this week was Horrified. I played. It's a cooperative game, and honestly, I could just say right now, it might replace Base Pandemic for me as like a intro cooperative game.
in my brain.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, good point. But basically, it is pandemic and style reskinned as spooky monsters. Yeah, like Frankenstein, werewolf, the mummy, creature in the Black Lagoon. And you play a character, it's sort of asymmetric. You kind of have a special ability. You have four actions, same as Pandemic, where you move around the board, you can pick up items, you can trade items, you can you can contribute to the objective for each monster. They have a unique way of defeating them. But it's just a great theme and implementation of cooperative mechanics that I think I would just whip that out with any new player or any cooperative itch that I need scratching.
So funny enough, I got this game not this year, last year's Secret Santa from BGG. This was a gift that my Santa got for me. And I actually, at the start of the pandemic, a month and a half in or so, I was trying to decide on a game to play with my brother, and I pulled this one out. And I liked the theme enough that I had put it on my wish list for Secret Santa, but I didn't really look too much into the game. And I pulled the game off the shelf, and I pulled it out and started reading the rules so I could learn it to play with him. And it was like, oh, cooperative, and I just put it back on the shelf, which is why I haven't played it yet, because he's not a cooperative game fan. And I didn't even know it was cooperative when I put it on my wish list, but it looks like a lot of fun, and I'd like to give it a shot.
Yeah, it was super fun. Each monster is super unique, too. Like, the mummy, you kind of have to... There's, like, this puzzle that you have to solve, and the werewolf, you have to get a bunch of vials filled, essentially, with the potion to turn them back, and you have to... There's different locations on the board, too. So the mummy, you have to go to the museum to solve that. And you have to go to the laboratory to solve the werewolf. And I think Dracula, you have to destroy a bunch of coffins that are spread around the map. So each game is super different, and you can mix and match which monsters you fight each time. So I'm looking forward to play that more.
Yeah, it looks quite neat. So I'm glad to hear from someone whose game preferences I trust a bit that they enjoyed it. So.
Just a bit.
Well, I mean, I know you, and we've played games together and have enjoyed them together. So it's not like I'm reading some random person's thoughts on the internet.
Greg, you weren't trying to gouge out your eyes while we were playing Teach You earlier this week, so Ben only trusts you a little bit.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, good point. That's a very, very good point. Although I wouldn't say this. I was really hoping that you'd say... for your two-player segment last time, that Star Wars Rebellion would be, you know, one of those games. But I just didn't hear it. I was driving. I'm like, you know, screaming at my stereo system. Like,
well, I don't think that it's a beginner two-player game, which I thought was what we were discussing.
I thought it was just two-player only games. But yeah, anyway,
me too.
My bad.
So
let me amend this. If you play Star Wars Rebellion with someone who reveals three planets and you have pulled two of them already and they don't move their rebel base and you immediately go destroy it, you're going to have a great time.
I see. So that's why you only trust me a little bit from that one move. I see.
Because of your gameplay.
My gameplay.
Yep. You gave me a win and I trust you for it. So, yeah.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yep.
Shall we transition over to our segment?
Well, now that you said it.
No takebacks. Let's do it.
Yeah.
All right, Greg, what's our segment?
So the segment for this week is goals of 2021, I suppose. Gaming goals of 2021. What you're hoping to accomplish, what you're striving for, I suppose.
Very long-winded, multi-worded segment title, right? It's going to be great on the podcast app for everyone later on.
Yeah, well, I think it's pretty important. I mean, a lot of people love their metric-based goals in terms of like a 10 by 10, so like, you know, play 10 games 10 times. There's other numerical combinations that people like to do. But I wanted to strive for that this year, but also some more abstract goals as well. So what about you guys? What was your like philosophy with this?
I mean, I definitely have a couple of numeric-based goals. I'm not doing a 10 by 10 this year.
Likewise.
Just because I think this year is going to be... a weird year. I would like to try a 10 by 10 again in the future, but I think this year it's kind of pointless. Because for me, I'd want to do I would much rather do a 10 by 10 in person. So I'm gonna wait. But I guess the first one for me that I had come up with, because I look at my shelf and I see that I have a good number of games I haven't played yet, I want to play like, and it's not necessarily like I have to, if I play one this month, I need to wait for the next month, but I'd like to play like one new game a month.
One new
Ideally
to you
from my
game that you
shelf.
own?
Ideally. But also like a new game. Like Stick'Em, I counted as my first new game of the year because I had not played it. But ideally, it would come from my shelf. But I'm also not going to say, like, oh, I've played a new game from my shelf. Now I'm going to wait a month to play the next one. Like,
Right.
so it's basically like 12 new games from my shelf. And the reason I chose that number was because between what games I have in Florida and what games I have up here that are unplayed, I wouldn't be able to do. I was originally going to do like 20, but I only have like 23. Well, I say only, but it's kind of nuts. But I have 23 unplayed games on my shelf up here, and I feel like I'm not going to get to almost all of them. So I picked like a more reasonable number, I guess, for myself. But that was the first goal I came up with, was I'd like to play a new to me game, ideally from my own collection, a month. So 12 games this year,
I like
which
it.
I think is easy enough to do.
I have a very similar goal. My goal is the same goal I make for myself every year, is play each of my games once. I don't have, I mean, this is very relative, I guess. I don't have an obscene amount of games. I don't have a crazy amount of games. I definitely have a lot of games compared to the average person, probably. But I have a collection of board games that is reasonably manageable to play through every year. I only have one game that takes more than 4 hours. I only have one game that takes, I guess, two games that take more than 3 hours. But everything I have is the under 3 hour length, and quite a few of them are under 1 hour. So, always worth a shot.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the only one you might have trouble with this year is Twilight Imperium, but.
I might have trouble with all of them. That's, I don't know when in-person gaming is going to resume for me. Hoping to get a vaccine in the next 3 or 4 weeks. We'll see what New Jersey decides to do with me.
Just start smoking, Jonah.
That's right.
If for me, I also had that, but the 10 by 10 is something that I wanted to explore, because so now that Amanda and I live together, we have the potential to play a ton more games. Before, we normally just play on the weekends, and we still got about I think it was like 300 or so plays in. I mean,
Wow.
maybe it was a little two, maybe 250 or so. So like technically, we probably could double that, living together now. So that is a nice goal. And the 10 by 10 was something that I wanted to explore because I wanted to get like a deep dive into my collection. So the 10 by 10 for me should be 10 games that you want to just like jump into and explore different strategies. Obviously, they would be games that you like to play, not forcing yourself to play a game 10 times, but wanting to play a game 10 times, and then going into a deeper dive on all strategies and aspects of it.
Yeah, I have done a 10 by 10 the previous 3 years, and I'm not doing one this year. I completed my 10 by 10 this past year, and if I can give you one bit of advice, it is to be willing to swap out a game that you already have on your 10 by 10 for another game that is seeing more play. So I think that's a much more enjoyable way to do it, because then you are still playing what you want and not trying to force yourself through something you arbitrarily chose for the list at the start of the year.
Yeah, and I'm already seeing that too, because we made just sort of a we jotted down games at the beginning of the year, what we thought we'd want to play in our 10 by 10. But there are also games that I haven't gotten to the table yet that I think would be on our 10 by 10. So this is just a ever-changing lists. We keep substituting games in that we get to the table. I'm like, oh man, this would be great for a 10x10.
There's
what are
a
some
great...
games on there?
Oops, sorry, go on.
Oh no, I was just going to ask, what are some of the games on the list? They're like, what's one? Just name a game. What's a game that's on there?
Quirkle.
Yeah, Quirkle. Already halfway there already. For her list, she basically put the games that we played a lot last year, which is fine. But I think it would be great to explore some other ones. But one would be Yokohama, which is kind of new to us. We've only played that maybe two or three times now. But for me, that's going into one of my favorite games, because the variable setup and just how different that game is each time and just the mechanics of it, I really enjoy. That's just something to explore more than 10 times for sure. And it doesn't happen that my upgraded components came in the mail yesterday, so I'm excited about that.
I just wanted to chime in really quickly. There is a really cool product on Etsy that is a 10x10 tracker, and it's just 10 rows with a little whiteboard rectangle on the left and a meeple with a bunch of meeple holes, I guess. I don't know. So you can just move it over for each game and track it. And I think it's a neat little thing to do instead of just typing something into an app.
Yeah, we saw that, but I think the shipping was like $30 or something like that. I can't remember what it was. There was a reason that we didn't get it.
$21.33 shipping from the UK to the US, and it's a $31 assembled piece to begin with. So it is quite expensive, but I do like it. And if I had a place to put it, I would love to grab one and try it sometime.
Yeah, I'm sure that you can go to Michael's or something and make your own sort of whiteboard style 10x10, but
oh yeah,
for a lot cheaper. I want to chime in with a goal that I have already completed.
Congratulations.
Thank you. This is the goal that I make also every year. I'll talk about my new goals later. But my goal, this is just kind of a permanent goal. It's not a yearly goal. Get rid of all the games I don't want. I successfully did that recently. I got rid of, I think, 5 or 6 games. I got rid of Broom Service, Terra Mystica, Istanbul Big Box, Get Bit, and this tiny game I got in a mystery box at PAX that I shouldn't have purchased 3 years ago. But those are all gone now, and now my shelf is only games that I want. Feels great.
It does feel good. Yeah, I did that recently too with the move. I purged a little bit, and seeing my collection sort of trimmed down to games that I just would always like to play, it is a good feeling. And that's actually one of my goals too, is to trim, by the end of the year, trim again to get that even smaller. So it's even a more concise and enjoyable collection.
That's also on my list. I have a very hard time selling games, so I just put it at sell 5 games this year. I've already sold one, so that's cool. One of them, I mean, it was very hard to sell because it was Mechs vs. Minions, and it's gigantic.
What was the shipping on that thing?
Honestly, the shipping wasn't that bad. So the shipping was only $20, which is what I charged the person, because I charge for shipping. But I said $20 as an estimate, because I just wanted to get rid of the game. It came to like 23 or 24, but fun fact, people, if you ship big boxes UPS and use the code EASY, you get like 20 to 30% off your shipment. So it went from like 25 down to like $20.50. So it was not as bad as I thought. The hardest part was finding a box. I had to go to, Home Depot and buy like a 28 inch by 16 box or something, because it's so huge. I thought it was going to fit in my Anachrony Infinity box, so I had kept that, and it was too big, so I had to go buy one. But
I feel like you could rent that box out to, like, somebody.
Well, that's the thing, I actually have somebody interested in buying the Meeple Realty insert for the base Anachrony box, And I'm just going to put that box in the Anachrony Infinity box and cut it down to fit better because it's already like the perfect size. So that doesn't count as a game I'm selling, but it is giving me space because currently the Anachrony box is sitting on my shelf. So
Yeah, you can
it's
post
there.
it on Craigslist, a one bedroom apartment, right?
Yeah, it is quite large.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's, I mean, I've mentioned before how hard it is for me to sell games or get rid of games. So this one's kind of big for me because I would like some space and I would like some money back. So I'm trying. I have like 7 games listed, so we'll see what happens.
But with that goal, though, comes, for me at least, that I want to play all my games at least once. With a huge collection, that becomes pretty, it's a pretty big task. You know, I think I have probably give or take 200 games, and to be able to play those once to determine, at least once, right, to determine if this is a game that I want to keep in my collection or sell it. That's, and with these goals, I think goals should be a somewhat manageable, or should be achievable, essentially.
And you don't think that
And
is?
well, this year I've seemed to gone a little bit overboard with my goals, and you know, I'll just consider that me being super passionate and driven, but you know, instead of being delusional. But I think it, you know, there's a gray area there. But I think that's super hard. I mean, 10 by 10, that's, I guess, up in the air. But playing each game once, there's some games that I want to play like a couple times. That maybe like a 10 by 5 or a 20 by 5. And I think it's just becoming, it's compiling on each other that I might not be able to accomplish these things.
A lot of people
So,
do 20 by 5s or something that isn't a 10 by 10 to go slightly wider, and I
yeah.
do like that idea
Yeah,
because,
especially with
well,
these big collections, I think that's probably the best strategy to go wide.
well, I do have a question, and that is how many unplayed games in your collection do you have? Because that's why I cut mine down to like the new game a month thing, because I don't want to get over aggressive with my goals. I mean, ideally, I would play all of the unplayed games that I own that are up here in New Jersey with me, but I'm keeping it at a lower number to make it a little more realistic, and then I can just continue with that goal next year and just keep it as like a permanent goal. But yeah.
I think right now I've got it down significantly, but I think maybe there's about six or seven unplayed
Oh, I thought
games.
you were going to
That's
say
not
60.
bad. Yeah, me
Yeah.
too. I
Yeah.
would.
Max 10, and I don't even think it's that high.
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, a 10 by 10 on top of trying to play all your unplayed games with a large collection makes it even more difficult. But if, I mean, six or seven's not that bad, so.
Yeah, and those games, but that's like Gaia Project, I just got in the mail the other day. Like, I've been really itching to play that, but that's, it's sort of a, no pun intended, like a project to get going. A lot of these games are on the heavier side, so learning the rules, teaching them. It's not just like, oh, pick up a game. You want to play each game once, but it's not just grab it off the shelf and play it in that time. There's a little bit of investment involved beforehand, which adds to the work.
That's why I've been hired to teach you Anachrony.
That is right. Yeah, you can send me the
I'll
invoice
send
in the
you.
mail.
Yeah. The invoice is
Root.
Root and Flip'em-Up-Dead of Winter.
Fair enough.
But yeah.
There was another goal of that, I guess it's not metric based for me, and that was just to expand my gaming tastes, I guess. Going back to the heavy economic games, that's not a forte of mine. It's not something that I've enjoyed as many other mechanics. But I don't want to start or keep saying like, I don't like them, I'm not good at them, but I'd rather not limit or block myself from having these new experiences when I should just enjoy the play and like try to figure out something cool to do in the game just for myself and just have a great time and in a vacuum and not block myself proactively before even finishing the game.
I have a fun goal for you this year, Greg. Make
What's
a
that?
mean move in an economic game.
Gee, talk about unachievable goals. No, I think I could do that Well, first I have to play an economic game.
Right.
On this subject, I think it's really funny because Patrick and I both on the last episode talked about Imperial, and I think we had both played your copy of Imperial, and I think both of us had a point where you could make a mean move toward us and you chose not to
Greg
for
has never
both of
chosen to
us.
make a mean move in his life in
I
board
mean,
games.
there was literally a point where we were playing Imperial at Patrick's house, you and I and someone else. It wasn't Patrick though in our game. And you literally had the option to like take resources from like two different locations that would have hurt everybody else, and you're like, no, I'm just gonna take this one that like won't really help me. And I'm like, what are you doing, Greg? What are
I
you
don't know.
doing?
I could see myself doing that. I mean, I do make mean moves, but I think you guys brought up a point last, was the last podcast, where two player only games where that's the only opponent and it's not a mean move because that's just the optimal move and there's no other choice that you have. If it was so beneficial to, like, screw two people at once and also benefit myself, probably would have done it. But yeah, more often than not, I wouldn't be mean just to be, to be mean, even though that's like the social contract that you guys sit down on a game, a competitive game, and that's really what it's all about. But that's a goal, to get past that and to realize that it's not like reflecting of my
Moral
morals or
character.
whatever. Yeah, my characters, like, it's not gonna, I'm not gonna, get a penalty, a real life penalty or fine for being a little bit of me, like taking your green resources in Imperial. I'm not gonna like feel bad about myself. So,
Well, okay, so here, if it'll help you get past it, you can be mean to people that aren't me.
okay,
wow.
that's fair.
So you can be nice to me in the games, but then be mean to everybody else. It's like a half measure.
Well, all right. I'll
Sounds like
write that
collusion to
down.
me.
I'll put that on the bottom of my goal list. But if I get to it, I
Perfect.
get to it. If I don't, so be it. But that is something I wanted to explore more. Like, just enjoy the experience. It's a mean experience. Still enjoy it because that's the name of the game. And just enjoy each play, no matter what. Find something cool about it. Find something enjoyable about it. Because what, while you're playing games, you want to have fun. You are enjoying the time with your friends, the banter back and forth, and just don't take things personally and just enjoy the experience.
I like it.
What a nice goal.
Can I share an ambitious goal that I have?
Sure.
To
What if we
do
said
this.
no? Would you not
Yeah,
share
I'd share
it?
a different goal.
Oh, okay. I'm just checking. But yeah, go ahead.
So I'll do this how they do over-unders in sports. My goal is to buy fewer than 3.1 games all year. So three or fewer, obviously. I already have one planned purchase this year. That is Horseless Carriage from Splatter in, like, I don't know, 9 months, 10 months. And yeah, I want to try and not buy more than two other games this whole year. I really am happy that I got rid of all the games I don't want. And a big part of not having games you don't want, let's make that not a double negative. A big part of only having games you want is not buying games you aren't really sold on. So, yeah, I want to try and buy three or fewer games this year. And one of those spots is already locked up, and that includes Kickstarter backing. So if I back something on Kickstarter, that is going to count towards that. That excludes Kickstarter arrivals, because those were purchased before. And, something like Blood on the Clock Tower that was purchased in on Kickstarter in 2008 and is not going to be here for another 5 months, doesn't count. So that's my ambitious goal.
Question about that, because I might actually still be on track to have not bought a new game this year. Do you count games where the Pledge Manager opened in December, but I waited until this month to finish the Pledge Manager?
When did you back the game?
November.
Well,
That's it.
I see what you're saying, but no, because you're not technically buying it. You're just like,
Yeah, I put in $1 and then I paid for it in
Did you plan
January.
on getting the game when you
Yes, it was
put
Veil
that
of Fate.
dollar into it,
So,
then
yeah.
that counts as last year.
Okay, cool. Then I'm still on track. I'm gonna put mine at 10 or fewer because it's hard for me to not. I one slot's already taken up. Mythic Battles Ragnarok is an all in immediate all in. I don't care if I have no job or not.
I mean, you don't even have to
But
have this goal.
I want it though. It's 'cause it's I don't want to buy like too many things, and I the puzzle of sending games to Florida so I have room in another location is like stupid. Because then I need people in Florida to play them with me. But also I like collections enough to like have it in a game room in Florida, so it's like neat, but I don't need it. So I'm gonna say 10 or fewer games for me, and we'll see how that goes. But I'm at zero right now, so it's fine.
Yeah, I definitely don't want to buy too many more. I mean, three is probably a good number. And I forget, I was watching a video the other day where, I think it was a Rodney Smith video, like a table talk segment where about FOMO and collecting. And he brought up a good point about that you're buying these games because of the potential fun that you are going to have with it, but your whole collection is fun as well. Like, what's the difference between having fun with games that you already like and enjoy that you have on your shelf already, or the potential fun that you might get when you buy that game and it's going to come in a couple months or a year even. So you just I have to change my thinking around for that and yeah, enjoy what I have already. Don't worry about missing out on anything because what you're missing out on is fun and you have that already sitting on my shelf, so.
Yeah, that's a good point, and that's exactly how I look at the board games I have. I have all of these board games that I really do want to play, and that's part of how I can resist buying new ones. I want to go play the ones I already have.
Yeah, and like finding new stuff. Well, the only exception I can think of is something that is such a new experience that you would want to invest in that you can't get with something that you have already. I think that's probably the only exception I would take. I mean, there's designers like Darwin's Journey I'm eyeing right now because I like, the Italian designers with Marco Polo and Teotihuacan and all that stuff.
Although maybe put that on hold
Yeah,
after
I was gonna
some
say,
recent comments.
yeah, talk about moral character. But that is it caught my eye already. So I'm like, oh man, like I'm tempted. The temptation is there because I know their catalog. I like all their games. But since I like all their games, I have most of their other games. I'll just play those. And do I have to waste money and another space on my shelf that I have to get rid of another game? So is it worth it? I don't know.
I'm scared to see how much extra shelf space I'm going to need for Mythic Battles Ragnarok. However, from all reports that they said that size, like game box amount wise, it's going to be like a half to a third the size of Pantheon, which would be great because a third would be one cube and half would be two. So ideally, it would be a third the size, but yeah, they said they're not going to go as overboard with like the amount of extras, but I also don't believe it because that's how they make money. But
Did you say a third would be one and half would be two?
well, not really. I mean, it depends on how you can
I'm
wedge the
trying to do
small
the math
box
in my
in.
head.
It
Oh, man.
depends on how you can wedge the small boxes in because if they're big box expansions, then it's going to be one and a half. I just didn't. If it's mostly small boxes, I could probably wedge them into one. So.
Man, this is like my Decrypto explanation all over again. Like my brain's exploding.
I mean, I knew when I said it that the math like literally didn't add up, but I just like I can probably puzzle piece it into one cube.
That's well, I've seen your shelf, Ben, and correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah, you have a lot of cubes that only one game's in there, right? Like just a
Yep.
huge box game, and I'm, but that's fine too. But I think mine's a little bit opposite with four, Euro game or regular box games to your one giant box. But the amount of fun that you get out of that giant box is probably just as good as mine.
I mean, one of my cubes is the Anachrony big box next to Shia, and that's like the number two and number three game on my list in one cube, so that cube itself is great. But I mean, I also get a lot of like, I mean, it depends on the game, but like Scythe, I got the legendary box, so like that added space. but it holds everything from other boxes in it. The Too Many Bones, I got the Trove chest, which I haven't even filled. I was going to fill that after the podcast. That's going to take me a couple hours. It's literally been on my shelf for like 2 months, and it's just an empty one full cube crate that I need to fill with the other boxes that are on the shelf. So that'll be nice. I'll get a little space back there. But yeah, I mean, honestly, I have a hard time finding space for my small box games. Like Dice Fishing, Roll and Catch, and Campy Creatures. They're like literally, it bothers me how they're in there like at an angle and they're not like vertical, because I don't, they don't fit well. I don't know what to do with them.
Horizontal.
No. I'm not going to go horizontal. I need to remove games from on top of the other games to get to the games I want to play.
Yeah, organizing your shelf is a game in itself.
Yep. And one of these days, I want to take all the games down from my shelf and put them back in an alphabetical order, but it's just such a nightmare to take them down and put them back. So.
Well, maybe thanks. Next time you're unemployed, you can do it.
Oh, thanks, Jonah.
You also need one of those old like library ladders for your shelf, too.
That would be cool, honestly.
That would be sweet.
That would be really neat.
Yeah, because you go all the way up to the ceiling, right? Stacked?
Yeah, pretty much. Well, that's the thing. That's the other thing. Like,
that was the last time you had to jump for a purpose to get a game off the top shelf.
No, I just go on my tiptoes. But like, Mechs vs. Minions didn't get me any real space back because it didn't fit in any cube, so it was on top of the shelf. So like, that didn't get me any space. But hopefully someone buys Battlestar Galactica.
It got you money. Interested.
Yeah, it did get me money, so that was a good part of it. But someone's interested in Battlestar Galactica, but they haven't messaged me in 3 days, so I'm going to message them back and be like, hey, it's still interested. But we'll see. That's just, it's a goal, so I'm going to work toward it and see if I can sell some games.
All right, what's the next goal? I have three more.
I have, I guess I can combine these two. I have a game-specific one. So one is finish Jaws of the Lion, Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion.
Sweet.
Finish that. And also, this is probably too ambitious, is start regular Gloomhaven, which I don't know. Like, I don't know if we're going to get to that, but you know, we've been enjoying Jaws of the Lion so far. We're only, I don't know, maybe six or seven scenarios in. And I don't know, we're going to be Gloomhavened out, but that is something that's been sitting on my shelf in 2 years,
what
3 years.
Combination of words.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, you can bleep that out if you want, but I mean, it might as well be doing that on my shelf because I'm not getting any value out of it. It's just sitting, staring at me, and you know, squatting over. So
now that you live close to me, if it gets to a point where in-person gaming is something I'm comfortable with, I would definitely join your Gloomhaven campaign.
Yeah, more than welcome, man. More than welcome.
So, yeah. It's nice to not have to drive an hour for all of my gaming sessions, or potentially in the future, not have to drive.
It's nice to have to walk to the couch to do it.
Yeah, right? But, yep. Let's see. I think just a general goal for me is to just not start any more hobbies this year.
Oh, wow. Wow. Can I write that down?
Yeah.
And hold you to it?
Happen. I don't think it's going to happen, but yes.
What hobbies did you start last year?
Jumping.
No, I actually, interestingly enough, in December, someone made late November, someone made a Reddit post, and they put, I'd had them back in college. I had two fountain pens back in college, but I could never get them to write well. Like, I just couldn't write with them. I don't know why. And someone posted an orange fountain pen in, like, it somehow made it to, like, the all page of like Reddit or something, and I was like, oh, this is beautiful. So I bought it, and now I like fountain pens. So
you're learning how to write?
Well, I am actually like
reading. That's good. I need to learn how to read still, Ben.
Well, okay, wait. So I used to hold, I'm showing visually, people can't see, but it's funny because there's actually like methods online, but I used to hold pens like this.
Oh, gross. Like,
all the way around it.
Just for the listeners.
Yeah, so, well, if you look it up, it's actually called a dynamic quadrupod grip. I found out there's, like, names.
That's pretty badass.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds cool, but, like, my middle finger and, like, if I took my pointer finger off of my pen, I would still be able to write because my middle finger is what's, like, holding it. But I found out that, like, doesn't work for fountain pens because it rotates the pen and then it, like, won't write well. So I've actually have completely switched over to this, which is called a dynamic tripod,
What's
which
this?
is what that's a dynamic tripod.
Oh, wow. Like Mini-Me and
Nike
Austin
tripod.
Powers.
Yeah, which is what you're supposed to, I mean, supposed to. That's like the apparently the least fatiguing way to hold a pen.
Then why is my handwriting so bad if that's how I'm supposed to
I
write?
mean, it doesn't help your handwriting. Your handwriting can still be garbage.
Damn it.
But yeah, no, I got some pens. I'm trying to relearn how to write things like bet so like I've been practicing. I've been writing in like a journal every night just
B
to like write some stuff
E.
down. I have a cursive penmanship book that like you write in. It's got like lines in there so you like practice. I literally relearned how to write cursive because I haven't written cursive since like fourth grade.
Really? I only
So
write in cursive.
I can't write in cursive anymore.
Yeah.
I look like an 8-year-old trying to write.
I've
Yeah,
always looked like an 8-year-old trying to write.
I don't know. I basically forgot how to write cursive, and then I picked this hobby up at the end of the year, and it's been fun. I mean, some of these pens are like super nice, and I really like enjoy writing with them. Like, it's a nice tactile experience. It's different than like it's. I know it sounds weird to say that. I don't know, but
Nothing
it's fun
sounds
to write
weird.
with, and it's nice to write my thoughts down at the end of the day. I've been keeping like, let's see, what was the first day I started writing, and I haven't missed a day by accident since, unless I chose. December 16th was the first day I wrote,
My
and I've
birthday.
just been writing stuff
Wow.
since then. And I don't know, I just write like little blurbs at the end of the day, but it's nice to like reflect on what happened during the day, good or bad, and get your thoughts on the page. And but I don't want to start anything new because when I get into it too hard and I start collecting things, so.
Just before we transition away from how you hold a pen, really quickly, when we were living in Korea, my co-teacher told me the story of how he had to relearn how to use chopsticks before he met his father-in-law to be, soon to be father-in-law, whatever, because there are correct ways to use chopsticks and incorrect ways to use chopsticks. And the way that he used chopsticks was not a correct way, and also it is like looked down upon to use chopsticks that way. I really don't know the intricacies of this, but just imagine if you're holding a fork or a spoon with your hand like a fist and scooping something into your mouth, it's similar to that idea. And it was interesting that he was telling me he had to relearn how to eat just so he could appear, like higher class, let's say.
Isn't it also like rude to, you know how like when, at least in America, when you break open the chopsticks and you like rub down the filings, I feel like I've read somewhere that it's rude to like the
Oh, like
establishment,
shave
I
off
guess, in Asia to
things.
like rub them together because it seemed, I don't know, I feel like I've heard that,
The entire
but I've
time
never
that
been
I
there.
was in Asia, which is a full calendar year, I don't think I ever encountered non-metal chopsticks.
Which would probably negate that
So,
entirely.
right.
But I don't know why. I feel like I've read that somewhere, but yeah, no, it's definitely weird to relearn something that you've known how to do for your whole life. But interestingly enough, I now pick up a pen or a pencil and my fingers go to the tripod style grip like right away. So it was a pretty easy transition. But yes,
Is that
long
how you
story
hold a
short,
fork as well? And spoon? Because I hold a fork the same way I hold a pencil.
Now I have to think about it. I don't know. I don't have a fork next to me. But I'll get back to you next week.
Okay. Try and eat something in the next week so you can get back
Yeah,
to me.
I will. But yeah, no. So I'm gonna make a broad generalization to not start another hobby that has the ability for me to collect things. If there's a hobby that doesn't involve collecting, sure, maybe. Like drawing. Oh, well, no, that would involve collecting markers and
Jumping.
art supplies.
Yeah.
Jumping, yeah.
Your
But, let's see.
next hobby could be learning how to read the entries in your diary now after you wrote it down.
I know how to read. I love reading. I have a book collection on my Kindle. But nope, that was it. That's a big overarching 2021 goal, which I think is a very difficult one for me, but I would like to do it.
Very nice.
Can I list through a few, or you have some more, Greg?
No, you're not allowed to. Nobody else is allowed to talk.
Well, yeah, well, I do mine really quickly. It's another game-based one. It was Pandemic Legacy Season 2,
The best of the
and
three.
I'm looking forward to it. And then also Shadowboxing Season 1. and hanging it up. Yeah. So I've seen that a lot online, where they put their map and some of the cards that were important in their game and their characters and stuff, and kind of making like a nice collage or, you know, setup in that shadow box. So that's a goal, but that's a fun, silly goal. I think we can do that.
And you have the nice brick walls behind you to make it nice and easy to hang something, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just get my power tools out and hang up a board game. I'm sure my landlord would love that. Oh, so what were your other goals?
So I have one numerical one, and that I think is even the wrong number. Ben, how many new board games did you say you played last year, and did I say I played last year? I think I was like two fewer than you. Was it 48?
I was at 48, and then I realized that one of them wasn't on there, so I was at 49, but you said 46.
Okay, so my goal is to try 50 new games. I don't think I'll have difficulty doing it. I tend to actively seek out new games to try before I buy, so that's always good. And I also am always willing to try something new. So loosely shoot for trying to play more new games than I played last year is one. Next one is keep the podcast all year. So assuming I don't get banished from it for mentioning Tichu.
Okay, dear diary, I played Tichu today. Okay, it was just terrible.
Oh, hold up. I can't use the word, but I have also started writing mini game, not reviews, but like game blurbs to use in my notes for the podcast. And I don't know if you can see this, but the people can't see it. But if you could reverse it, it literally just says,
It says, I screamed at Rich and rage quit.
It just says, teach you effing sucks.
You're paraphrasing, but yeah.
Also, I just want to say, I don't think that I screamed at Rich. I think
I'm just kidding around.
And it escalated, and then it just kept going, and then I decided that this game sucks, and I never played it again. So,
and we have a new house rule for Tichu as well, thanks to you. Well, I guess Greg and I have a new house rule, because you're never playing it again.
Correct.
And what is that house rule, Greg?
You'll have to remind me. Oh, wait. We're mind melding right now? What is it?
We're trying to. I'm trying to.
You can't criticize your teammate, Greg.
You can only criticize the opponents.
I only heard it 4,000 times during the game.
That's right. Yeah, that's the first step of me being super mean in games. It's just criticizing my opponents left and right. That's strategy, though.
That's right. That's how you need to win. Anyway, my last goal is make new friends, but keep the old. Not really keep the old. I'm fine at that. I'm also fine at making new friends. But Jessica and I will very likely not live in New Jersey anymore starting May 4th. And we don't know where we're going to be next yet, but we will be somewhere else.
May the 4th be with you.
And Ben, you've mentioned this before because we went to PAX together. I don't really have any problems talking to new people.
Oh, not at all.
So I'm not too worried about that, but we'll see what happens with COVID, you know, going to a new place and then trying to make friends. If there still aren't in-person gatherings, I don't know how easy that's going to be. So
very true.
Try and make a new game group and then hopefully find more suckers to come on the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess you can trim your friend collection down a little bit and add new ones. And no, it's tough though, especially these days to get a new game group. And I mean, online makes it a little easier, I suppose. But I wish you the best of luck with that.
Thank you.
I was looking forward to attempting a podcast recording in person, but that's never going to happen. So
yeah, it might. We'll see. But I don't think I'll be trimming my friend shelf, Greg. If this podcast is any proof of that, we've had people from Australia, from California. Next week we're going to have someone from Israel on the show.
Oh, wow.
One of these days I'm going to have a friend on here that Jonah's not friends with.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I'm really finding everyone I know to join.
Yeah, this is more like Jonah and Ben play games with Jonas French.
Well, to be fair, I met people before meeting Jonah that are now also Jonah's friends, so I'm counting those people.
You're one of those people, Greg, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I don't know. I think we met Greg at Patrick's house, and you were there the first time I met Greg.
I might have met Greg before that at Princeton meetup.
Possibly.
Yeah, it might have been a Panera
meetup. But I met Patrick before I met Jonah, so I always have that. Hey, Patrick. I always have that.
Yeah, shout out to Patrick.
Our favorite co-host.
Oh.
I'm just kidding. Our most numerous co-host.
Well, I'm sure it's the one.
Don't criticize your teammates.
It's the well, he probably doesn't give you as many technical issues as I give you.
He gives zero technical issues. Like none. Not even one.
That's a 10 out of 10 friend right there. I'm more of like a, 7.5, 8 out of 10.
That's a new goal for you, Greg. Sort out your audio issues for future podcast episodes.
Here, I came prepared today. You switched it up on me since last time I was on. But
well, we shouldn't have any issues in the future now, so.
That's true.
It's all locally hosted.
His famous last words.
Well, it's locally hosted now, in terms of like the recording software.
We'll find out soon enough just how locally hosted it is.
Fair.
Are there any 2021 game releases that are on your radar before we sign off? Mythic Battles doesn't count.
Okay, well, then I think, oh man. I'm not going to count Kickstarters that are finally delivering, so no, I guess.
No,
at least not.
We can talk about those for a little bit. Games that are on the way that you're excited to play.
Well, I guess it ties into playing a new game, because I would love to play it. And Greg, this might actually be one maybe you would enjoy joining. It's Gloomhaven-esque, but has that anime art style that I think you like from level 99 style games.
Frosthaven.
But it is Madara. I don't know if you've looked at Madara, heard of Madara.
I have not.
But it's like a JRPG style heavy campaign narrative game. But I have the first set, and it's going to be like a three-part game. I don't know when the second and third are delivering, but they redid the entire like 400-page storybook and like had it professionally like edited and
that's crazy
redone. Yeah, and it's coming in February is the time frame they gave for it. And I'm not playing that game until I get that new book, because I don't know why I would play through an unedited, because it was very good. But I'm not trying to play through a game that isn't as up to date as I know it will be when I get it. I don't want to like start something and something might have changed. So I would like to start playing Madara or try Madara, but I'm waiting for that to come in. But maybe you would like to join, because it's a long, heavy narrative game with a JRPG art style. But I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm looking at pictures right now. It's M-I-D-D, right? A-R-I?
Yes, M-I-D-D-A-R-A.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one sees the bean.
I was about to ask when that is being delivered.
It's still on track to finish printing. They said that it should finish up printing in April.
Oh, man, so it's not even going to get here before I leave?
Probably not. But there's still a tabletop simulator mod, which I think has been up to date, but yeah, I don't think so. But when I come, I'll bring it. I'll throw it in my carry-on when I come visit you wherever you are. And if you're in Boston and not Portland, I'll drive up with it.
Even better.
So, yeah. That's really, I mean, that was the big one for me. I mean, Mythic Battles doesn't count, apparently, so I can't say that.
Only because we already talked about it.
I mean, if Trickshot is any indication, Guards of Atlantis 2 is probably going to be pretty good hit. And I mean, Guards of Atlantis 1 was a pretty popular game release amongst reviewers, so
that could be. Is that fun. The 2v2 area control skirmish something?
It's that like MOBA-esque game. Yeah,
I don't know what MOBA is.
A massive online battle arena, which is like a video game. It's like League of Legends. So it's got like moving minions that like move of their own accord, and then you control heroes. Kind of like Cloud Spire, except you're not doing, except you're trying to fight heroes instead of towers. So it's got like I think a little more tactical style to it because you're not going for something that's like in one place all the time. You're actually maneuvering around the other person's heroes. So we'll see. It looks fun. I'm excited to try it. So that'll probably be another game that takes a whole cube, considering one of the stretch goals was a cube box. What about you, Greg?
Crokinole, I'm just excited to get that board finally. Yeah, I'm looking at my Kickstarters. I got in the mail the other day Rival Restaurants, and that supposedly plays really well with a lot of people, and I don't have like a good six plus or six-ish player game that's not like a party game. I maybe have like maybe one or two, but I think that would be a good one to have. It's like filling in a specific role in my collection. And then the ones I'm excited about are Transcontinental, which the pledge
Oh, did you
manager.
back that?
Yeah, well, I did a Ben style pledge $1 and get the pledge manager because I was still iffy, but I think I'm going to go for that. And
The
then also.
Game Brain podcast was really high on that. Sorry to interrupt, just so we can talk about it for a second. It looked really interesting as well.
It did, yeah. So. Yeah, I was super interested in that, so I'm excited to get that. Supposedly July 2021, but we'll see about that one. And
That's
then,
soon.
yeah, it's coming in. And then Unforgiven, the Lincoln Assassination Trial, which is a two-player-only game based around the obviously the Lincoln Assassination Trial.
Who
But
plays John Wilkes Booth?
I don't know if you can play as like specific characters. One player plays the defense, and one player plays the like prosecutors, I guess. And I got the up like the deluxe version, and it just looks really cool. Like the board, the box is like a book that you'd put on your shelf. Like it has like this cool fake book style.
This is why we're friends, Greg.
But I love Watergate. So Watergate is, obviously it's like historically, it's a real event, and you're playing Nixon versus the, I guess, Washington Post, and it's like this asymmetric two-player battle, which is thematically and mechanically sound, and it's just super interesting. I love those style of games. So this really caught my eye with Unforgiven, the Lincoln Assassination Trial, because I assumed it was the same thing. And the gameplay looked cool, and the art, and like I love history. So
I would like to try Watergate. I've heard good things. So.
yeah, and well, that's a game that just gets better the more you play with it because the cards never change. Like everyone has the same exact deck, and it's. When you know what the other person has, then that game is just elevated to the next level because you can sort of predict, oh, he might have that card in his hand, or he's probably saving that for this, so I have to keep this card. It becomes such a tactical game at that point.
The problem is that's such a big barrier to entry with some of these games. Like Twilight Struggle is so well regarded, but until you know every card in that deck, you can't really enjoy the game as it's supposed to be played.
I mean, that could easily be a topic for you guys with games where you have to play multiple times in order to get to appreciate them at its fullest. Because I have Twilight Struggle on my sell shelf because I just don't see myself ever taking the time and investment to get it. I mean, I got that at a garage sale for like $5 too. I'm like, man, this is a great deal, but am I ever going to have the time or the person or have one person to play it with enough to get the most out of it? I don't think so.
I, in terms of my anticipated games for this year, most of them come from Kickstarter, like ones that I'm waiting to come in. And I'm just scrolling through like games that should be coming in this year, and there's a few that I'm actually like really excited to get. But then I scrolled past Necromolds, and I was like, oh my God, I cannot wait to get this game. And I'm 99% sure I've talked about it before, but always my memory fails me. But it's literally one of those ones that like hits on nostalgia, where you mold these monsters out of clay, and then you like it's like a battle map, and you literally it's like literally a little mini Warhammer. Like you measure out with like a ruler, and you roll dice. But if you like kill one of your opponent's figures, you like smash them with like a ring that you wear, and it turns them into like a little spider monster instead of like the molded monster. But it's pretty cool looking because the resource is literally how much clay you have left. Like that's your resources. So if you can't fill a mold with the clay, you don't have enough resources left to make a new monster to put on the board. But when you mold a monster, the excess clay is like the remainder of your resources. But it just looks like it's a ton of fun, and I'm excited to get that one in and give that a shot. And then Lucky Duck Dice, Jonah. That's not a game, but when that comes in, I'm gonna have to pick that up.
I feel like you're regressing, Ben, with learning how to write and playing with Play-Doh again. I think you need to evaluate. No,
Yeah, I
that
know.
game does sound pretty cool, though.
We'll cover Legos next week, Greg.
Excellent.
Legos are awesome. Give me one.
I guess, yeah, Kickstarter, I guess, is the only thing that I'm excited about because, again, I'm not trying to buy so many new games this year. I'm just waiting on for the new ones. Fantastic Factories expansion is coming. I'm excited about that. The Grand Austria Hotel one I backed out of. I was not paying that shipping for that, even though I love that game. It's not worth it. But yeah, a few other little ones, but I'm excited to enjoy what I have this year. And at the end of the year, hopefully reevaluate again, get rid of some. Because that was a nice feeling, getting rid of some games, trimming the collection, having this shelf of any game I touch, I would pick up and pull out. I would love to play
And
instead of
getting a little money back in your pocket.
very true. Yeah, very true. And that's a goal this year, just personally, like just to save as much money as possible. And board games is, as you know, an expensive hobby sometimes, and just limiting what you purchase and just being having a little bit more
Control.
resilience, yeah, control.
Fight
It's gonna
against the
help.
consumerism that is so unbelievably prevalent in North America and the world, but really North America.
It, especially
Conspicuous consumption.
these Kickstarters, I mean, with the FOMO, it really plays on it. The heartstrings, and especially
Yeah,
I have
resist.
subjective, yeah, I'm susceptible to it. I'm trying to get better at it, but you just got to appreciate what you got
It was
now.
really difficult for me to pass on Townsfolk Tussle. It was really difficult for me to pass on that. It's like a old school like 50s animation style KDM like battle section. Like it doesn't have any of the settlement building, but it's like a Cuphead style art game, if you know what Cuphead is, the video game. And it's like just the battle segments of Kingdom Death Monster, but it was $85 just for like the only version of the game. And I was like struggling. I'm like, do I need it? Do I need it? And I'm like, honestly, I'd rather just play Kingdom Death Monster again, especially since like stuff is still incoming from Kingdom Death Monster. So, yeah, I held off on that and it felt good. So, I'm going to try and do that again with other games.
I wish you luck, then.
Thanks, Greg. I appreciate it.
The games on my radar for this year, I already mentioned the next Splatter game. I mentioned Public Market last week as well, I think, which should be delivered in the next month or two, I think. I don't know. Soon. Really excited to give that a go. Blood on the Clock Tower, if it ever comes to fruition. I mean, it is looking like a nicer and nicer product as they post more and more updates, but who knows when that's going to happen. And also, an 8-person in-person gathering doesn't seem to be happening anytime soon, so they can take their time with that for now, I guess. There's a game called So You've Been Eaten that looks interesting, only because it's a game with a player count of 0 to 2, and they are not happy. I mean, this is an exaggeration. They weren't thrilled that you can't write on BoardGameGeek a low play the minimum player count of 0. So I'm just interested to see what the heck that's all about. Apparently, it's about getting eaten by a monster, and then it can be you against the monster, but then also you can die, and then it's someone else against the monster, and that someone else is in the game. I really don't know, but
Yeah, I'm interested to see how it turns out though, because you've
yeah.
mentioned it a few times and I've looked at it, but I
As
don't really
far as
understand.
experiments go, it sounds fun to look at.
Yep.
And then the last one that I'm even really aware of is John Company, second edition. So John Company is a game by Cole Worley, who is behind PAX Premier second edition, which we like, Root, Oath, He works for Leader Games, but also has his own publishing thing called Whirligig, which I really enjoy the name of, since his last name is Whirly. Yeah, John Company looks like a really interesting game, and it's been out of print for a while, and it'll be cool to see what it's like.
Does it worry you that you kind of fell out with Oath the longer it went, that John Company might not be for you, or not really because it's already an established game?
I don't know a lot about John Company, and no, it does not worry me, mainly because I'm going to be trying before I buy anything anyway. So,
Makes
if I
sense.
try a game and it's not great, all I lost is the time that it took me to play it. And I generally enjoy playing a game with friends regardless of the game, except for Splendor. So.
I hope they update
And
the
wait,
board
Splendor and Brass Birmingham.
Right. What was that, Greg?
The board, I'm looking at pictures for John Company. That board is just like
It's pretty gross, right?
so bland. Yeah, the cubes and the board. Yeah, so I hope if they're going to reprint it, they spice it up a little bit.
Yeah, he's talked a bit about the updating of the art and stuff. I think the board looks really cool. It looks really practical and interesting. You're looking at the same one that has like Mutiny and the Jones family and Shipyard and Manor, right?
I think so. I mean, it's just like a white. It's very like food chain esque, I guess. It's white and then just a few graphics to like really solidify the gameplay, I suppose. It's got like pink and red, and there's a bunch of colored cubes on the board with cards surrounding it.
Yeah, I actually think it looks similar to the design of PAX Pamir, just like the market on PAX Pamir.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see what it ends up being.
I guess for this type of game, it doesn't have to be flashy, right? It's for sort of the subject matter and the time period. Like it's a very mechanically driven game, and I don't know. I guess it doesn't need like crazy artwork or
Right.
pieces.
Look, we'll see what happens when they come out with the second edition. We'll see what it looks like, see what the game is like. I still don't know a lot about the game besides who it's by and that it's supposed to be kind of good. So.
Yeah, I guess that's all. Yeah, that's all you can go by. That's what catches my eye when the designers that I like or publishers that I like
If the game
put out a
starts
new
with a
game.
T.
Yeah, basically. Tekken is another thing I want to play this year. That's one of my unplayed games that I got, and I have yet to bring that to the table. And Zulkin, that was on my 10x10 that I
Yeah.
wanted to play, we'll see.
I think the biggest problem for me is just if I buy more games without playing games that are unplayed, it just keeps adding to my unplayed games list. So, it's a problem I've got that I am kind of working on, but at the same time, like it just means more games to play, so like I don't hate it, but I want to make sure that I do play them. So, like Tidal Blades has been sitting on my shelf for a couple weeks to a month now, but I also don't know. I've heard it's okay at two players, so I would probably just give it a shot with my brother. But yeah,
Speaking of
stuff like that.
strange box sizes, Tidal Blades is like 1 foot by 2 inches by 4 feet, right?
Yeah, it's honestly, I think it might be like 2.5 inches tall, and that's it. It's not like a tall box. I really wish that they just went with a cube and fit it all in a cube instead of making it that long.
Yeah, it's pretty
That's
strange.
it's weird.
I'm trying to figure that out.
Yeah,
Why do you
it
have a
might
tape
be.
measure this handy?
I was shipping games. I need to measure the dimensions of the boxes and stuff.
Okay, Greg.
Sure.
What else would I be measuring?
How high you can
Measuring.
jump?
That's true. Yeah, it's the most
You can
awkward.
jump for no reason at all.
Yeah. Don't be jealous of my tape measure.
I'm jealous of the marathon medals behind you.
I wish I could take credit for that, but
I'm jealous of the interior brick walls, to be honest with you. That's always been a style I like. So,
yeah, that's what drew me to the or drew us to the apartment for sure. And then that living room, it looks really nice too, with the games on the wall and brick, exposed brick. So you'll have to come over, Ben. Keep inviting. Keep saying,
look, it's a pandemic, Greg.
Well, Jonah, I mean, obviously you're invited too, but that's literally like five minutes down the road.
One day, I will be there one day. Because okay. I have to teach you anachrony. It's only fair.
It's true. We had a contract.
We did. Yep. All right. Well, that just about does it for another week's episode of Jonah and Ben Play Board Games with Friends. Or really, I guess, Jonah and Ben Play Board Games with Jonah's Friends. I'm Ben. I don't have many of these friends, so they're all Jonah's. And this outro is really bad. This is, yeah. Well, you know what? We ended a sad, sad year. We're going to get into a better year. So this year I'm going to have more friends that are, you know what, whatever. Jonah and Ben Play Board Games with Friends. If you have any comments, jonahbenpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks, Greg, for joining. Thanks, Jonah, for joining. Thanks to Louisa for the great music throughout.
Dear Diary, I had a bad sign-off today.
I'm going to write that later today. I usually write them around 11:30 p.m., so that way I can get in all of the day's activities. So first line, bad sign-off.
Oh, it was fun, guys. Thanks for having me.
Of course.